The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast. It's Oliver Callan here in for Ryan. This is a compilation of our best interviews from the last 5 days, all in the one place. And so this week, Deirdre Davis told me about a lovely garda who checked in on her mother-in-law Pauline and didn't show up empty-handed. Historian Tomás McConmara explained how children can keep busy and connected to their grandparents by becoming family historians. Orthopaedic surgeon Aaron Glynn told me why we shouldn't be overdoing the DIY as we all try to keep busy around the house. Image consultant Maria Macklin from Carrickmacross talked to me about why it's important to dress for success even while working from home. No pyjamas. Linda Cullen told me of the frightening experience she had in Dunleary while out for her daily walk. And Chris Hayes from the Irish National Heritage Park spoke to me about taking their tours online for people to enjoy while they're confined to the couch. So that's it. Thanks for listening and I hope you enjoy it. Now, speaking of the heroes line, and we speak to Deirdre. Good morning to you, Deirdre. Deirdre Davis.
Good morning.
And you're calling us from Holland, is that correct?
That's right, yes. Myself and my husband are living here in Holland. We've been living here since 2005.
Aha. And what is it like over there at the moment?
Oh, it's a bit weird, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm a teacher, so I'm teaching from home virtually using the Teams app on Office 365 at the moment. And it's a bit weird, definitely. It's a bit weird.
And it's a weird place at best of times, but it's especially weird now.
Absolutely.
But your story is about something happening here at home. So tell us about your mother-in-law, what happened to her a few months ago and what good things are happening now.
Sure. Well, about 6 months ago, there was a break into the house and she lives in Terranure. She lives alone. She's a lady of senior years, let's say. Her name is Pauline. Yeah. And she had a break in. So very luckily, the guards called and one guard called to take the report of what happened and all the rest. And even she was really surprised even back then that even another guard came at another time to try and fix the garage door for her, which was just going above and beyond the call of duty. I mean, we're very conscious that she's living on her own. She has 7 sons and each of them does the very best they can to call her, ring her and call to her regularly. Yeah. But just to have the presence of the guards really helped. So so that was already a really positive thing for us. You know, yes. We could see that the guards were taking an active interest in her. But yesterday, lo and behold, she answered the door and there was a big white van outside and out jumped a guard. The guard actually that took the report of the break-in with a huge bunch of flowers and a pan of bread.
Wow. And so when you see a paddy wagon pull up outside your house, you fear the worst. But the boys in blue were doing the nicest thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. It gave her such a lift, such a lift. And it gave a lift, in fact, to the whole family because when we heard that she had made a connection with them, we know that now that they're watching out for her and taking care of her, which is a big relief to us, especially for us at a distance. My husband, Anthony, who's here, her son, obviously. Yeah. And we would really, really, really like to thank the Terranure Garda Station for all the efforts that they have done and just the difference that it makes.
Yes, Terranure Garda Station, we salute you. And exactly. The flower delivery is continuing. Maybe chocolates the next time.
Oh, well.
But that, a huge shout out. Well, that's fantastic. Really lovely
exactly,
story.
Exactly, exactly. No, my husband in particular, I mean, he asked me to speak for him because he would get a little bit emotional if he were to talk about it, to be honest. Yes. He'd love to be there in person, to be able to see his mum, of course, but also to be able to shake the hands of the guard. Who did such a small gesture, but a kind
and
gesture.
It means so much to you guys and it means so much to Pauline as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And maybe she hears this now or I'm sure someone will play it back for her as well so she'll hear that she's not just famous in Terranure but now famous right across Europe and anyone who listens to the RTE show and to the Ryan Tubridy show. And thank you very much, Oliver, for giving us a chance to say this message.
Well, thank you, Deirdre, and thank you to Anthony as well. And a big salute to Terranure Garda Station. Take care of yourself, Deirdre.
Absolutely.
It's almost,
thank you.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You so
it's
much
almost,
keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
And it's just coming up to half past nine. Now, for all of you locked indoors with your children, the lovely children, it reminds me actually of people working from home of, do you remember the economist, I think he was, talking from Korea, and he was gate crashed on a call live on BBC television, and his kids came screaming in the background and his wife comes charging in and she pulls the kids out. I think there's a lot of that going on in homes at the moment. So what do you do with the children? Well, we have an excellent idea from oral historian and author Dr. Tomás McConmara, who's come up with a lovely idea for children, how they can keep busy and, more importantly, connected to their grandparents and to older people in their families and among their friendships, family friendships, even when they can't see each other because of physical distancing. Hello, Tomás.
Hi, Oliver.
Good morning to you. Tell us about this idea.
Yeah, well, look, to be honest, Oliver, it's an idea that I've had for a long, long time, well mm-hmm. before COVID-19, but I've always felt there was a tremendous value for younger people to be connected to the older generation, and there was a tremendous insight and understanding that can be achieved from just that simple process of talking to, and more importantly, listening to our older people. It was part of our culture for centuries, and I suppose maybe in recent decades that's been slightly interrupted by the world we live in now. But I think hearing about boredom, you know, and I think, first of all, children should never be bored, to be honest with you, Oliver. I think
absolutely
there's something really
not
wrong with it if children are bored.
Yeah.
But if they are idle, I think something that they can do is reach out to their grandparents, who unfortunately are isolated. And actually, it's ironic that the older generation, who probably would be most comfortable with staying at home with their family,
yeah,
are disconnected from them. But young people can reach out to them, ask them, would they mind that if they're for 10 or 15 minutes every day, that they rang them up and recorded their life stories. So start about going back to their parents, their grandparents,
yeah,
their early life, their childhood, their influences, and try and, you know, build a picture over the period of the crisis and over the period of the isolation of your grandparents' lives. And, you know, it will be a tremendous enrichment to the children. It'll be also an enrichment to the grandparents to, you know, feel that their kids are reaching out and they want to use their time in a meaningful way.
And are interested in their stories and their life stories and things they may not have talked about for years.
Well, exactly right. And actually, you know, when you were introducing about children there, it is, of course, targeted at children. But also, you know, older children and people our own vintage, Ivan,
yes,
or Oliver, sorry, should reach out and also speak to their parents, or if they're fortunate enough to have their grandparents. Because, you know, this message is more maybe at the moment to the parents here, but we all know, whether hopefully it won't be the present reality, but the reality that we all face is that there'll be silence at some point in our lives where those answers should be. And, you know, yeah, irrespective of the COVID, now is the time to reach out to say to somebody, your life story, your memories are important and have meaning. And, you know, I want to record those. And I guarantee you, it's like some of the most beautiful things in life. You will never regret it, because in time, you'll be able to open up that archive of memories.
Yeah. And people are sitting down, they're thinking about things a lot more than they might have a few weeks ago, and you never know what kind of long-lost love story might emerge, ringing a grandparent, asking them about how they met their spouse, maybe the wedding day, because obviously a lot of the people got married in a completely different universe, never mind to what we're in now, but obviously before that, wedding breakfasts and things like that were a thing in the past.
You're completely right, and I mean, so many dimensions of our lives were so different for our parents, our grandparents' generation. And, you know, it's so important to capture that now, because it's the only way we really have of connecting with that experience. And,
yeah,
you know, it's even local history, it's local tradition, your own family heritage. They'll be able to illuminate aspects of that, you know, that you could never know in any other way. And you'll end the crisis in a much more knowledgeable, understanding and enriched way. And you'll actually want
to, yeah. I'm sorry, Tomás, your line is just breaking up a little bit, but we'll try and get a link to your idea, because you have some interesting suggestions and questions to become a family story collector. We'll get a link on our on the Turbidity Show website. It's all about your parents, remembering grandparents, finding out. It's all about getting those stories, long-lost stories from the Middle Ages, you know, the 1980s, when people wore clothes. They didn't wear clothes, they were thatched. People were thatched. That's what the children will view. That's how they view our past. That's the way they're going to find. But it is a good time. People are sitting in, they're reflecting. You'd never know what little nuggets might come in. So children, even the grown-ups out there, can become amateur historians and journalists for a time over the phone. Write it down. It's a really lovely idea. That's Dr. Tomás McConmara, who's the oral historian and author of The Time of the Tans. 51551, back after these. I was mentioning earlier on that DIY stores, hardware stores, garden centres, all of that are staying open, but we have a little bit of a warning, a little bit of terms and conditions apply to that one. We are speaking now to orthopaedic surgeon Aaron Glynn, who's on the phone. Good morning to you, Aaron.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, between the beautiful weather we're having at the moment and the forced isolation that's coming with it, the temptation is very much to get out and do a bit of DIY, but you have a warning.
Absolutely, Oliver. I mean, the weather today is absolutely beautiful. The evenings are getting longer and everyone's garden is in a mess after winter. There's weeds everywhere. There's gutters that need to be cleaned. But we're just asking people to be a little bit careful. This time of year, we always see an increase in trauma related to the use of power tools and people falling off ladders. Mm-hmm. So we're just asking people to be a little bit careful because hospitals, as you know, are under a lot of pressure at the moment. And every time a patient comes into hospital, they're met by the emergency team, they're met by the nursing staff, they're met by the x-ray technicians, they're met by the orthopaedic service, they're met by the physiotherapist, the anaesthetic team.
A lot of people.
So one person coming into hospital sucks up a lot of resources, and at the moment we're just a little bit tight for resources. So I would ask people, if they can at all, just please hold off on the long-term projects. I appreciate the weather's beautiful, they're under pressure to get stuff done, but there's a lot of work you can do in the garden without climbing ladders.
So lo-fi DIY is okay, but
lo-fi DIY.
Don't be hanging out of a ladder.
Don't be hanging out of a ladder, for God's sake. Lawnmowers, weeding, you know, all that stuff needs to be done, absolutely. But just maybe hold off on the stuff involving ladders that haven't been done for the last few years. It can probably wait a few more months.
And in normal times, do you see a kind of a spike in ladder-related or DIY injuries?
Absolutely, this time of year, yeah, especially the first sunny weekend of the year is always, it's carnage, you know, with all the other stuff that goes on in sports. And we're not seeing a lot of that work now, so, you know, our workload has dropped a little bit, thank God, from, you know, there isn't as much sports-related trauma, but there's always that huge spike in garden, you know, simple garden-related stuff, you know, power tools, falls from ladders especially. And we're just asking people to hold off on that kind of work for just a few more weeks or months.
But people are generally sensible, yes?
People are generally sensible, but by God, do they get full of enthusiasm when they see a sunny day out
really?
There and they've been cooped up and they're bored and they're looking for something to do and they want to get out there. And, you know, I think there's so much we can do outdoors at the moment, but just maybe just put those projects on the long finger because this might not be the best time. That's all we're asking.
And what's your message on trampolines, by the way? Because they've become really popular. People are buying trampolines.
I think the message is to just be careful. I think if you have a trampoline with good netting around the sides that's safe and that has one kid per trampoline per time, I think that's okay. Look, kids need to burn up energy. I appreciate they're driving their parents crazy at the moment. But I think trampolines are a huge source of injuries and referrals to hospitals. So I think just, you know, be safe. You know, one child on the trampoline at a time and careful use of netting and, you know, minimise the risk is all we're asking.
Which hospital are you based in, Aaron?
I'm based in Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital in Drogheda.
Aha. And how are things there? How is the mood among staff and so on?
Well, people are nervous, obviously, because we're following what's happening in Italy and Spain and France and China. Yeah. And we're seeing that there's a huge amount of work coming in related to the coronavirus. And it's going to dramatically change our hospital, our ability to handle work, and with staff becoming sick and having to take time off for isolation and illness. And I think it's really going to put us under a lot of pressure for the next few months. So that's why we're asking people to be outdoors, but just to be safe.
Yes. So the staff are steeling themselves. So we want people to be sensible, not going in to hospital for what could be avoidable injuries, such as don't go cleaning out the gutters.
Don't go cleaning out the gutters. We're doing a lot of telemedicine as well. We know a lot of patients who come in, get their x-ray in the emergency department, are then being contacted by hospital staff for further follow-up to guide them as to whether they need to come back in again or not. And, you know, we're finding that this is a very useful way of keeping people out of coming to clinics unnecessarily as well. So we would ask people to please answer your phone. Sometimes it might be from a private number, but we're asking people to please do answer the phone, because very often that's the hospital calling, trying to contact you to tell you whether you do need to come or not, you know.
So for regular regularised. Yeah. And with sport, I presume sport all cancelled, there's obviously that's going to save a lot of hospital time.
It does, yeah. No, again, this time of year as well, we see a huge spike in sports-related injuries, and thank God we're not seeing that at the moment. But we're still very busy. You know, there's a lot of elderly people as well. You know, simple falls in an elderly person can cause a lot of injury as well. So we are still doing a lot of work, especially with hip fractures.
Yeah.
That kind of work does need to be done. So we are still busy, but we're just trying to ask people to just avoid the, you know, preventable, usual sources of injury while they can.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us this morning, Aaron. That's a useful word of warning. Stay off the ladders. Trampolines, be very careful. And the best of luck to everyone, of course, in the Lourdes Hospital up in Drogheda there. That's Aaron Glynn, orthopaedic surgeon there. How many of you are working from home and you're sitting there, even at this hour, coming up to five to ten, in your tracksuits, in your dressing gowns, particularly if you don't have to have the FaceTime video on, dying maybe to dress up again because, you know, 2 weeks, 10 days in, it gets a little bit dull wearing the same thing. Well, let's talk now to image consultant with House of Colour, Maria Macklin. Good morning to you, Maria.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
And you're based in Monaghan, by the way.
I'm based in County Macross.
Lovely. And we were COVID-19 free up until a couple of days ago. I think this is a single case.
We really
exactly. We truly are all in this together now. But tell us about your area of expertise, which is how we can dress and maybe feel good about ourselves, even though we're working from home.
Yes, well, it's true that we can trick our brain. So we act in a manner consistent with our dress. So when we put on a stained T-shirt or an ill-fitting pair of jeans, our brain thinks it needn't try so hard, and so it doesn't. And so it does matter that you dress up for work, even though nobody can see you.
Yes.
There's a lot of studies and research to back this up, which makes it really interesting. So there was a study carried out in 2014 that used 128 men, and they had to take part in a mock negotiations of buying and selling. Those dressed poorly in tracksuits and plastic sandals averaged a theoretical profit of $680,000, while the group dressed in suits amassed an average profit of $2.1 million.
What?
You know, yeah, so it's really interesting.
And it's not even just how you feel, it's how you perform.
It's how you perform. Your brain, you can trick your brain. So when you're dressed more confidently and more formal, you don't have to be completely formal.
Yeah.
You trick your brain into thinking that, you know, what you're doing is important, and so your clothing can prime your brain to behave in ways consistent with that meaning. It's very interesting.
It's kind of fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, it is fascinating. So I would suggest that you shouldn't be in your dressing gown or your pajamas. You know, you get up, you get dressed. And I have four children here, and they're doing schoolwork, and I'm making them get up and get dressed too.
Very good.
Much to their disgust.
So what are your tips? What if someone, you know, maybe they don't dress so formally for work, but is there anything they can do at home to make them kind of, I suppose, work better or enjoy it more or even perform better?
Yeah, I have a few things. The first one is to dress with intention. So think about what you're going to wear every day as opposed to throwing on leisure wear or staying in your pyjamas.
Yeah.
That indicates to your brain that you value yourself enough to take the time to dress. Therefore, you're valuing yourself to do what you need to do. You're set with a go-get-it attitude. And then if you have online calls or webinars, you're ready to go. You don't have to think about it. The other thing is to dress with authenticity. So you need to be comfortable about your own self and be comfortable showing your own personality. So if you are perceived as quirky, you need to dress as quirky.
Uh-huh.
If you dress like someone else, you're acting, and acting takes an awful lot of energy, so you use your energy to be something you're not.
Right, that's like
people
putting on a costume.
People see through that very quickly. It absolutely is, and people can see through that. Even when you're on a telephone call or if you're on a webinar, people see the essence of you when the essence of you is there.
It's like when you see a lad who's not comfortable in a suit at a country wedding and the tie is all over the place, and you can just say, that's just not you. You don't need a tie.
Yeah, there are people who look better without a tie, and there are people who absolutely need a tie. So if you think about the James Bond character, we call him a classic. Classics need their tie. They need to be clean-shaven, they need to be very tidy and very well-groomed. But there's a different type of man who really is uncomfortable, and my husband is one of those. We call those the naturals. They need to be a little bit more relaxed. Their dress needs to be a little bit more relaxed, and they feel very inauthentic when they are dressed up. They often feel very dressed up. They often feel that they're constricted or hemmed in somehow. Their clothes need to have a bit of movement in them so they can to feel they can breathe. So, and that comes out when you're when you're working, when you're meeting people. So it's all about the first impression.
And if they need any tips, you're able to work from home, Maria Macklin in Carrickmacross there, image consultant, and you're available.
Well, I am available, yes. I'm not doing much work because most of my clients are face-to-face. I'm doing whatever I can do online, I'm doing online.
Brilliant.
But most of it is gone, yeah.
Well, more power to you and more power dressing to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Wear red. My top tip is to wear red. Wear red. Power.
Wear red. Excellent.
Yes. Not top to toe, but a small amount of it. Yes.
Shine in the sun. The devil wears red.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much, Maria. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
It's Callum, coming up 2 minutes to 10 o'clock. Now, speaking of the news, and if you've been reading Miriam Lord's piece, which is a delightful way of putting a horrible story to us about, and it made waves yesterday when Simon Harris just in a throwaway comment at his daily health briefing mentioned that he had been coughed at on the street. And if you're looking for a word of the day, it is Miriam Lord describing them as a witless poltroon, which is kind of a coward. And that is the best word you can come up with. Now, we have someone on the phone who's had a similar experience to Simon Harris, Linda Cullen, CEO of Coco Television. Good morning to you.
Hi, Oliver. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Now, walks are sacred in these times, getting out for the bit of air. And you went for a walk yesterday, but it wasn't pleasant.
Yeah, no, it was awful, actually. It was really, really frightening. So, I mean, I went for what has become my usual walk. I'm normally in the office, but I'm not anymore. I'm working from home. And I live near the West Pier in Dunleary, so that's my walk. I go down to the West Pier and down to the end and back home and then continue work or whatever, looking after the kids. But as I was walking very close to the bridge there, there were two kids. They were kids, you know, they were young boys.
Yep.
Were walking towards me, but they were taking up the whole path. So I was on the phone to my aunt at the time, and I looked behind me, no cars coming. So I stepped out around them onto the road. I wasn't really paying any particular heed to them except people coming.
But you were doing the sensible physical distancing thing that we're all meant to do.
Yeah, and I don't know whether they took umbrage at me stepping out or what. I've no idea. I mean, they were really quite young. One was barely older than my own children, about 10. The other was 13 or 14, those types of ages.
Yeah.
And the older one just turned and coughed at me, coughed or spat or sneezed. I don't know which, but he did that thing.
Yeah.
And I stopped and spoke to them, and they stopped.
You challenged them, even though it's quite a shocking thing to happen.
It was a shocking thing to happen, but I'd heard about it earlier on the radio as well, and I wanted to call them out on it. And I said, lads, you can't be doing that. You might think it's funny. It's not funny. It's really frightening, and it's really dangerous at the moment.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, though, the younger one then started running at me and coughing and spitting.
My God.
So my aunt could hear me I was shouting at that point, get off me, get off me, because I thought he was going to, you know, start handling me.
Physically attacking.
Yeah. And, you know, I suppose my own children are a little younger than him. I have twins. And I suppose I was so shocked. In some ways, I felt very unthreatened because they were young, but I felt more threatened than I possibly ever have in my life at the same time because of what coughing and spitting can do at the moment. And, you know, we're here at home practicing everything that we're being told to practice and doing our very best to
and then you're confronted
hold it all
with
together.
These.
Yeah, and then what was worse, though, I called the guards and I was standing kind of at the bottom of the bridge and they sort of, you know, slunk off. And then
they had followed you for a while?
No, at that point, your man just, the little fella kind of ran at me and I backed away.
Right.
Got on the side, and I'm calling the guards and I'm calling the guards. So they sort of slunk off at that point, but they'd already done their,
of course,
done their coughing
the harm
and spitting,
was done. Yeah.
You know? So they slunk off a bit, but then, so I'm standing on the bridge trying to explain to the guards and I started getting quite upset actually. And then they came back. And I think they saw it as a bit of a game, so they were sort of chasing me.
Even after you had told them you were ringing the guards, you're on the
phone. Yeah, they didn't care.
This shows the fear.
They really didn't care. So I got up over the bridge and found, you know, I started calling to other people. I stood beside, there was a patrol car at the with no one in it, unfortunately, you know, one of these kind of peer patrol things.
Yeah.
And they were a bit away from me, but they were coming back towards me. So I took out the camera. I took out the phone. I put the phone up to take a photo.
Yes.
And at that, they started running away. And I was shouting to other people, they're coughing and spitting. Be really careful. Be really careful. I kind of had held it together at that point. But at that point, I have to say, I disintegrated after that. Yeah. Into,
I can imagine. Did you manage to get a photograph of the little brats?
I got one photo, not very clear. Now, the guards came and I spoke to the guards at length. My aunt and uncle, who I'd been on the phone to, you know, who are practicing social, they drove straight down to the pier. They gave me kind of these bleach wipes they had in the car. They left it on a wall. I picked it up off the wall. Like, it's weird. I'm very close to these people and we couldn't be near each other. But I mean, I literally was wiping myself off with bleach.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was crying. I was bawling, crying, you know. So these two little kids were able to take, you know, scare the living daylights out of, you know, a middle-aged woman.
I'm sorry you had to experience that, Linda. It shouldn't happen.
Thank you. We've
heard it so many times. Would it put you off actually going out and about again?
Oh, yeah, I don't know what to do now. Right. I genuinely don't know, you know, because I've been hearing... since I tweeted about it yesterday, and this was at 4:30, something like that in the afternoon. So I don't know what to do. I can't decide. You know, I don't know. I mean, I can't get tested, so I don't know whether something landed on me or not.
Yeah, and it sets back your clock. It's the 14 days thing.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, I suppose the thing I would be saying is I don't know. I hear it's a thing. I hear TikTok, you know, there's a challenge. These lads weren't.
Well, the guards themselves have been spat at. We've heard an incident in Dublin and Waterford now. They're getting hoods to try and protect themselves. It's bad enough they're having to work on the front line in the middle of a semi-lockdown. You have the Minister for Health, who everybody in the country knows who they are, being purposely targeted as he's walking on his own because he's physically distancing. I mean, it's what is wrong with people?
I know, it's horrendous. And I suppose what the guards are kind of saying, like, essentially something like this weaponises people. So. Yeah. I mean, they might as well.
Well, it's an assault, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what the legal scenario is, but it's an assault on you, on your safety, on your sense of security and everything like that.
Yeah. And I, you know, that walk for everyone, I think, getting out for a walk these days, you know, everyone's trying to homeschool their children. They're trying to run their businesses or work or whatever from home. You know, we're taking care if we have to go to the shops. So it feels pretty awful, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, look, I hope you can get your confidence back and get out and about again.
Thanks, Oliver. Yeah,
maybe go walking with your unit, so you're not on your own, I suppose. Isn't that kind of the key to things?
But that's the thing. My brother does the same walk, but we've been intentionally not connecting up, even though we could walk 2 metres apart, but we're really trying to practice this fully. You know, we're really trying.
That doesn't help when, as Miriam Lord calls them, witless poltroons coming up to you.
I don't know if these young lads realise quite how frightening. Maybe they do. Maybe that's their intention.
They don't care.
I think they were doing it for a bit of gas. But I think if people understood how frightening it is and how harmful and dangerous it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it'll make them worse. I don't know.
Well, listen, thanks for telling the story.
Not
it gets
at
the
all.
Message out. I know it tells people to be wary, but hopefully that they'll start schooling their own kids at home and letting them know about this.
Yeah, because we can't stop going out for our walks because of it. I would agree with that. I just have to figure out how I can manage.
Maybe Conor McGregor is the man who could speak to these these poltroons. I don't know. A man who rolls around on the floor semi-naked now promoting hygiene might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, but maybe we could put something up, though. I don't know. You know,
listen,
I think messages from anyone who young people and kids listen to would be a really good idea at the moment.
No, I agree with you. Listen, thank you for telling your story. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Oliver.
Mind
Thanks
yourself.
Very much. Okay.
And the best of luck. Thanks a million. It's just gone 9:30. In this time of getting out and about, wondering if there's something we can do, there are a few places trying to get their offering out to you in various different ways. The Irish National Heritage Park in Ferrycarrig in County Wexford is one of those places. They're moving their tours online. So if you're into museums and history and all that, you can still do it from the comfort of your own home. Chris Hayes, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you? Good morning
from
a lovely sunny Wexford.
It's the sunny southeast. You're growing strawberries and wine there in February at this stage.
Absolutely. It was probably missed when when the Taoiseach was addressing the nation the other night, he also said it was now okay also to call Wexford Wexico, given the amount of sunshine that we do have.
Excellent. Now, you are in the Irish National Heritage Park. Tell us about it, first of all.
So, the Irish National Heritage Park, a lot of people have probably been here on a school tour, Oliver. And one of the most popular things that school tours do here in the park is they visit our Bronze Age cooking site, where they get to taste some meat cooked in our Fullocht Fí, which is the oldest and longest running experimental archaeology site in the world. Wow. The background to the park itself was the park opened in 1987. It's Ireland's largest open-air museum. We're set in 40 acres on the banks of the River Slaney, just outside Wexford town. A lot of people would know it from coming into Wexford over the bridge in Ferrycarrig. There's the round tower up on the hill of Carrick. Yeah. Now, the round tower is a monument that was built in the 19th century, but that's in the grounds of the park, and the round tower is actually built on the site of the first Norman castle built in Ireland in 1169 when the Normans arrived.
Piles and piles of history.
Piles of history, absolutely. And so, there was a bunch of locals back in the early 80s who had this idea. One man in particular, Ned Culleton, had an idea to have a park where people could come to Ireland. His idea was they'd get off the boat in Rosslare, they'd arrive in Wexford, and if they had somewhere to go to that would kind of tease them with all the treasures of the Irish landscape. So he thought, well, maybe what we could do is we'd build a dolmen and then tell people that the dolmen with the biggest capstone in Europe is actually in Carlow, just up the road, and then bring them to a ring fort and then point them on to a ring fort somewhere else in Ireland.
And you get a better sense of the size of it rather than just images.
Exactly, that's the thing, yeah. So all the reconstruction. So what they did then was the mission statement was to tell the story of human settlement in Ireland from the arrival of the first humans in the Stone Age to the fateful arrival of the Normans in 1169. And there was 15 reconstructed sites built in the park, and then the tour brings you chronologically through time till you arrive on the Hill of Carrick.
At the moment we can't physically go there, so what have you done?
So what we've done is, with our scant resources, we're a charity, and we've put together a media team with a former tour guide here, myself, a former forester, and we have Marie here with us as well, who's French, who brings a bit of spice. And what we've done is we've put our collective heads together in the media department, and we've gone digital with our tours.
Brilliant.
So our tour guide here, Jack Matthews, a local from Wexford Town, has put together some fun and interactive tours for kids, so they can go onto our YouTube channel, YouTube/Irish Heritage, and they can now see those tours. And it's a fun and interactive way. Yeah. And it's that thing, Oliver, that like every place else, when people can't come out, we're trying to bring that fun and entertainment element into people's houses and get people, you know, chatting to each other. They're short little videos, but it just gives a sense of what's going on. There's an interesting fact in there. And school tours, like I said, we have teachers bringing their schools into the park on tours, and they say, look, I remember being here as a kid, and this is where I got my love of history, and I remember going around, I remember tasting the meat in the Fullocht Fí. So it's a great place, it's a great story.
Do you have a demo? I presume you have a demo of the Fullocht Fí. It's something we could probably do ourselves at home with all the time.
Absolutely, yeah, we do. Like I said, it's one of the most popular things. Last year I was talking to
this is where you heat the stones on a fire and you into a hole in the ground as you dug, isn't it? And
yes, exactly, that's it, yeah. You pile up your stones and sticks
over the course of a week or something like that.
Yeah, no, it's actually a much shorter time. The most successful meat that we've cooked in it is actually rabbit, which comes out really nice. But the name Fullocht Fí is kind of deer bat, so deer we think would have often been cooked in it, and they were also used probably for making beer and all sorts of stuff as well. But it is something that we do in the park that's super popular.
You might do a later video on how to make beer if this thing goes on too long.
Absolutely.
By the way, how long does it take to cook the rabbit?
Not very long, actually. Only about an hour and a half to cook the rabbit. Oh. So that was it, you know. And actually, if you again go on to the YouTube channel, YouTube/Heritage Park, and you will see we have a full video up there of that. But the idea of Heritage Park Digital, it is just to get us out there, to stay in front of people, and when all this passes and we can open the gates again on the 40 acres, it is a great place for people to come and visit.
We've all these hidden secrets
in Wexford. Yeah. Well,
thanks a million, and the best of luck with that, Chris. Heritageparkie or their YouTube channel, which is the National Heritage Park in Ferrycarrig in Wexford. Thanks a million for that.